Tuesday, January the 11th, began actually sometime in the early hours of the morning with a long talk. Lyndon woke up, as he often does these nights, and we talked about the prospect for the years ahead. It is so fraught with danger and with decisions that we cannot see the end of. I am torn between two feelings, one the healthy one, that I should enjoy each day in this job and live it to the fullest, and the other, that the end of the term is like a light at the end of a tunnel. And my advice to Lyndon is so mundane and uninspired. Stay healthy, laugh some. Remember, you're as tough as other presidents who have lived through the same or worst. It was a day of bits and pieces because I woke up sleepy from my long talk. In the afternoon, I went to Mildred's office to work on the children's income tax with Ashton and the man who makes it out. And in her outside office passed Ed Lord, absolutely intent, writing on a yellow tablet, an associate justice of the Supreme Court, Abe Fortas. I dared not stop. Without asking, I was sure it was his feelings on the draft of the State of the Union message. The big event of the day for me was to go to the reception and dinner of the National Wildlife Federation, sponsored jointly by the Sears and Roebuck Foundation. I was to deliver four of their awards, a little statuette of a whooping crane, and to receive one myself for my interest in conserving wildlife and beauty. What a familiar sight. 1,000 well-dressed, chattering people in the big ballroom of the Statler Hotel, all brought there by their mutual interest in whatever sort of good works it might be, or politics, or culture. Now, many of these I've been to over 30 years, but in this one I felt like a real participant. On my right was a delightful old gentleman, Judge Lewis McGregor, president of the National Wildlife Federation, and on my left, James Griffin, president of the Sears and Roebuck Foundation, with whom I quickly got into conversation about the scores of Sears and Roebuck stores and shopping centers around over the country, and my delight that those being built lately, incorporating good landscaping into their parking lots. The one in Austin has quite a lot of trees. He took the ball and ran with it. At one of their big stores in Chicago, when the day's business is over, they use the huge parking lot to supervise play for all the neighborhood children. It's in a low-income part of town where there are not enough playgrounds. Talked about their work in cooperation with garden clubs, their art program that Vincent Price is working on. It was an opportunity I had looked forward to thank Sears and Roebuck and hopefully to urge them on. Stuart Udall was the master of ceremonies and Secretary Freeman the main speaker. I think of them as the beautification twins. General Electric won an award for imaginative engineering, unusual research, and successful development of equipment and techniques to preserve America's natural beauty. I asked the award winner just how much was really being done to bury transmission lines in new housing developments, and he said it had increased 400% in this last year. A glowing statistic, but I just wish I knew how to turn it into a picture in Austin, Texas. There were awards in various fields, conservation of water resources, soil, wildlife, air, forest, and delightfully enough, one in Conservationist Educator of the Year, which went to a young man named Johnny Mac Johnson of Union Springs, Alabama, most of whose work had been done with 4-H and future farmers and high school age youth. Nelson Rockefeller won the award for dynamic leadership in developing and promoting an approach to water pollution abatement, which has set an example throughout the nation. He said the people of his state had voted for the bond issue to pay for it by a 5-to-1 margin. I passed out my whooping cranes and checks to some four of the winners, and then I received mine and promptly announced that it would be given to landscape the new automobile entrance of the National Zoo. I had driven out there the day before with Dylan Ripley of the Smithsonian and their chief landscape architect to decide where best to spend the money. Each state had an award winner. Missouri's was our old friend Leonard Hall, who stopped by with news of Tony Buford. In Texas was Harry Jersey. There is an excitement about being with a crowd of people, and there was a sense of comradeship and mutual purpose and congeniality in this gathering, and a tiny little feeling for me of having achieved something if I could help make the entrance to the zoo a prettier spot, All in all, it was a good evening, over early. By 9:30, I was on my way to the Bill White's, where Lyndon had gone for dinner with just the three of them. The day had had its quota of annoyances, three or four stories about gumshoe practice in the White House, our effort to reduce the number of chauffeurs from about 100 down to 60, had succeeded, but at the rough price of logging every trip made by everybody who rode in a White House car, who and where to, in order to eliminate purely social and personal chauffeuring. And that, naturally, is abrasive to everybody who has gotten used to the happy ease of stepping in a chauffeur-driven car. The number of telephones have proliferated, sometimes far beyond all need. They, too, must be cut back, with the number of lines actually required by use and not by status. Nobody likes economizing. And the tough guy who gets it done, in this case, Marvin, gets cut up on all sides. It was a happy, companionable hour at the White's, in their pretty new home. Lennon had been reading him portions of the speech. And it is a delight to me to be out for dinner. One of the peculiar restrictions of life in this house being that we very seldom do go out for dinner.